Amazon is hiring near you. Start as soon as 7 days. No resume or experience required. Earn an additional $2 an hour through April. Health and safety are a top priority with all our roles and sites, and Amazon is taking precautions in our buildings to keep people healthy. Learn more or find a job now at amazon.com/apply. That's amazon.com/apply. Amazon is an equal opportunity employer.
Tatooine Sons, a Star Wars podcast, is a proud member of the Making Star Wars Podcast Network, the 2-time winner of the Fan Favorite Podcast Network from the Star Wars Podcast Awards. To learn more, go to makingstarwars.net. Welcome, Star Wars fans, to episode 91 of Tatooine Sons. Freddie Prinze Jr. stirred up fandom with his comments about Star Wars and the nature of the Force. We all have our thoughts on what it is and how it works, but what is the official position of Lucasfilm according to StarWars.com? We'll break it down this week. Plus, our hot takes, some exciting announcements about future guests, and some poll craziness.
You must feel the Force around you.
It's time for Tatooine Sons.
It's true.
What is the name of the Porg on the Millennium Falcon?
The Force is strong in my family.
What do you think his name is? It's a big moment.
I am a Jedi, like my father before me.
Maybe Tervis?
Do. Or do not. There is no try.
Tervis? Pablo, if you're listening to this live stream, that Porg's name is now Tervis. It's a good Star Wars name.
We're not done yet.
These guys record an awesome podcast called Tatooine Sons. Everybody listen to it.
Welcome, Star Wars fans. This is Tatooine Sons, your weekly look into all things Star Wars, from the unique perspective of a father sharing his love for the amazing space fantasy saga with his two sons. I am BB Nate, and I'm joined first by my brother, Samuel the Hutt.
Achuta, Star Wars fans. Thanks for tuning in. And if you're not a Star Wars fan, then you probably haven't heard about all this craziness surrounding Freddie Prinze Jr.'s rant.
But it was awesome. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't, like, say every third word that he said, but...
Or play it on this show or anything.
No, we can't play the actual clip.
It would just be constant beeps.
Yeah, Tervis beeps.
Yeah, it's lots of Porg noise.
And, of course, you can't have Star Wars without bizarre father figures. So, on that note, here's my dad, the Bowtie Jedi guy.
You sound so enthusiastic to do this tonight, guys.
We're tired, but
yeah,
I know we say that all the time, but this has like been a crazy weekend. We got family coming in town. Yeah. We spent yesterday doing a bunch of stuff. Moving.
I'm running on no nights of sleep so far.
Because you're sleeping in a separate room in like a pseudo bed, trying to get up and running. You had college all day, but congratulations on the chemistry exam.
Yeah, 98.
Woohoo!
Yeah, I'm still
great
surprised.
Kid. Don't get cocky.
Yeah, so that was pretty cool. I was at work all day doing a bunch of stuff. But the day started out pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I woke up to a message from someone that won an Oscar for, I mean, like, can you believe
Academy
that?
Award.
An Academy Award for his work on Star Wars. Not A New Hope.
No.
1977 Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
You can narrow it down based on that. But we had asked him if he would be willing to come on the show, and he responded that he is willing. So we're working on getting the time to record that. Mm-hmm. Then shortly there, I guess a few hours later, we found out that someone else that's like a big deal in Star Wars is coming on the show.
Yeah.
So we're going to be doing some interviews over the next few days. And then a few days ago,
mm-hmm.
we recorded recording with somebody from The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
So it's been a busy few days.
Definitely been very busy.
with everything going on Star Wars related, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So that'll be fun. We're gearing up. This is episode 91, like BB Nets, BB Nate.
Yeah, I didn't realize we were that close to 100.
I know. We got 9 more after this week, episodes before our 100th episode.
Our 2
This is madness.
And of our 3.
Yeah.
Impressive.
I feel like we've been doing this
most
for
impressive.
I know. Well, I mean,
well, we've been it both feels like it's been really
sometimes
short
it feels like long,
really long.
Yeah, but we're gonna have a lot of fun stuff on our 100th episode, and we want to hear from you. We did this last year; it was so awesome to be able to hear your messages of congratulations and just thanks and just like your just support. This show is about you guys supporting us and being a part of our Star Wars experience, and we want to hear from you guys. So email us at TatooineSons@yahoo.com. with like a short, like 30 second if you want, you know, message to us that we'll play on our 100th episode like we did last year with our 50th episode.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
It was really good. So we got that coming up.
And basement of your mom's house.
Yeah, that was a wild period of time.
The strangest jerry-rigged podcast. I think we had 3 TV trays.
Yeah, we would get 3 TV trays, each have our own mics, and be this like web of wires every week.
But hey, it worked.
It did work.
Now we've got like our own little podcast studio in the house.
Yeah.
Pretty awesome.
Over Obsession merchandise.
Yeah, with a lot more that we still have to get framed to put up.
Yeah.
That'll be cool. But, you know, hopefully, one of the ways that we are able to do this show is because of our awesome Patreon supporters.
That's very true.
Maybe we'll hear from some of these 4 new Patreon supporters from last week.
That's a new record.
That is pretty freaking awesome. We haven't had that many come in at once since really we launched Patreon. We had a bunch right at first, but we haven't had that many come in a week. We have Nathan Allen, Rich L, Dennis. Yeah. It's that, Dennis. Take that, Chatter Squadron. And Rez. I don't know their Twitter handles because they don't put them on Patreon. I mean, I know Dennis is DeWanga Wanga and stuff. But anyway, and just let's talk about Chatter Squadron for just a second. Those guys are pretty awesome. And I failed to mention last week that the person that secured, did you guys remember, maybe you didn't catch it last week. If you didn't catch last week's episode, let me see if I can find it here. Hold on. You guys talk for just amongst yourselves real quick.
About what?
About anything. I'm looking for something.
Oh, Lord. Totally blanking. Fallen Order.
Fallen Order, yeah, talk about Fallen Order.
There's not been a whole lot of news about that.
No.
They've been really keeping stuff tight about that.
There's something going on. I feel like, I don't know why. I mean, there's so much new Star Wars content releasing, and I'm like, what is any of this going to have to do with the final story? What is this, any of this? Why are we buying all this stuff?
Okay, that was great job. Thanks for taking up that 15 seconds.
Yeah.
Last week, if you didn't listen to last week's episode, we're not going to have George Lucas on our 100th episode. Let's be real clear on that. That's not what's going on. But George Lucas actually endorsed us and like gave us a shout out on the last episode. And in case you didn't hear it, let's just go ahead and play real quick.
All right, David, I'm guessing you'll be able to edit this. I just wanted to say before I do your little blurb that literally while I was sitting here about to record it, I saw a bumblebee on the side of my bed. And I don't know how a bumblebee got in here, but I had to fight it and I had to crush it like a bug. But here we go. I'm going to do your little intro and I'm going to do it fast and more intense. So let's get it going. Hello, everybody. This is definitely George Lucas. I just wanted to say that you should listen to Tatooine Sons wherever you get your podcasts. You know, it's a dad telling his kids about his love of Star Wars, and it could have gone really bad, but it hasn't. It hasn't. So definitely give it a listen.
Sorry, I was like so stunned at listening to it again, I couldn't get the mute button off with it. I mean, George flipping Lucas.
This is madness.
Quoted us. This is why I'm bringing it up in this context, because I failed to mention that the way that happened was that the civil war over Dennis between us and Chatter Squadron is done. It's over. And the olive branch that they extended to us.
I think it was more like a white flag.
Oh, well, you know, you could take it however you want. They extended it to us through getting their friend George Lucas, who actually called into their show a couple weeks ago.
Oh, yeah. I listened to that one. Yeah.
To get him to record this for us. And so we're pretty pumped about that. Okay. So thank you guys over at Chatter Squadron. Let's give him a hand. We're on the same page now. We're all over the Dennis thing. Coming together around Star Wars positivity is what this is all about. So, I guess that's pretty much going to do it for that. Why don't we go ahead and talk about, like, what, that 15-minute poll that we did this week?
Are you brainless? I never ask that question until after I've done it. What?
Oh, by the way, this show, along with the podcast poll of the week and everything else, is brought to you actually by Audible.com. Get a free Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/TatooineSons. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. I would suggest, if you haven't picked it up, maybe you want to pick up the Darth Plagueis novel by James Luceno. I'm wondering if that's going to have a little bit of impact.
Have you read it?
I have not. I want to. But
have you finished Legends of Luke Skywalker yet?
I haven't yet. No, I haven't had a chance to keep up with any books over the last few weeks. This is my crazy time at work.
Yeah.
So anyway, this week's podcast poll, I was sitting here, we were finishing up the notes for the show a little bit ago, and I like, oh, snap, I forgot the poll this week. So we did a 15-minute poll.
Super flash
poll. Not too bad. Got 54 votes for 15 minutes.
That's not bad.
Our poll was, have you read The Truce at Bakura, which is a pretty random sort of like, you know,
specific.
Yeah. So we had yes, no, where is Bakura? Other comment below. 2% said other comment below. We'll talk about them in a second. We had 9% actually asked where is Bakura, like they had no clue what that was. 31% said yes, and 57% said no. What do you guys think about the poll results for that 15 minutes?
I agree with the no, because, I mean, I didn't even know about this place, and when they said Bakura, I'm like, oh, they're introducing a new planet. Like,
if you don't know what we're talking about, just go listen to the last episode.
Yeah, I mean, so, I'll be honest, there's more yes than I thought there'd be.
Okay, interesting. Yeah. So who's got the first right. one here?
So this one is from Mando. Jeskad Adarik, it's some Mandalorian name, at Cad the Hunter. He says, I've read it, and it's great. I love how it picks up pretty much right after Return of the Jedi.
Interesting. Who has that? Eric, is that you or me?
So, Eric the Silent.
Oh, yeah.
At Eric
Unkenhaut.
All right.
Is that German?
I don't know what that is.
But all right.
That's a cool name. All right.
He said probably one of my least favorite Legends novels.
Yeah, there was a lot of comments. Like Adam Lance Garcia said it was terrible. Yeah. he didn't like it. Some people love it. Some people hate it, apparently. Daniel Sotir at DanRS87, he replied. He said, I read it and did good at seeing what it was like at... And I think it was... supposed to be I read it and it did good at seeing what it was like after Return of the Jedi in EU and Legends, and is one of the starting points I would recommend for getting into Legends for newcomers. Very interesting. I guess, you know, somebody said that they read it right after they read the Heir to the Empire series, and I would suggest that probably that would be fine. So yeah, Heir to the Empire is probably a better series.
I feel like reading Truce of Bakura after Heir to the Empire would be a very bad choice, because you'd be reading Heir to the Empire and then you, after all the comments that I've seen, read Truce of Bakura and they'll be like, this is kind of a letdown.
Mm-hmm. I think so too.
That's fair.
Alright, well, why don't we move on to this week's hot takes. Why did an official Star Wars book say that the First Order hasn't seen Kylo Ren's face? Sequel trilogy fans are asking, where's Rose?
Yeah.
And Kanan Jarrus had some very direct things to say about Star Wars fandom. It's time for hot takes.
This is where the fun begins.
Well, you want the bad news or the really bad news?
Impressive. Every word in that sentence was wrong.
Wait, the First Order hasn't seen Kylo Ren's face? This is from CinemaBlend.com. We'll link to it in the show notes.
They're pretty
generally speaking, they're pretty good. Kylo Ren, this is a quote actually, they did an article about this. You can look at the article on Cinema Blend. But there's actually a quote from the Ultimate Star Wars New Edition.
Oh,
all right, this is an official Lucasfilm Disney Star Wars book.
Okay.
All right, and this is the quote. Kylo Ren's helmet is designed in the style of the Knights of Ren. It is also reminiscent of the infamous mask of his grandfather, Darth Vader, connecting Kylo Ren to the dark side of his family heritage. So far, so good, right?
Yep. Yeah.
The helmet conceals his former identity as Ben Solo. We still good?
Yeah.
Also obscured by the helmet's vocoder.
Yeah, it is supposed to.
His different.
That's why Poe says it's so hard to understand. You thought
which makes his voice sound more threatening. Are we still good?
Yeah, we're still good.
And serves to intimidate both his enemies and his subordinates in the First Order.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Beyond this, protection it affords the helmet has no special functions.
Okay.
But what I'm trying to go back to is the helmet conceals his former identity. It seems to be suggesting that it's concealing it from the people in the First Order, and that's what the Cinema Blend article suggests.
Yeah.
But what about all those times that Hux saw him? And all the other people in The Last Jedi when he crashed his helmet and when he was running around on Crait and all of that kind of stuff.
I mean, I'm not frustrated with anybody in the continuity, but I mean, apparently the Lucasfilm story group's kind of...
But I guess the key thing is it's just like it obscures his identity, but the implication that some people have is that means he's trying to hide it. As far as, like, hide who he is as Ben Solo from...
I don't feel like the helmet itself is talking about that. It's, like, concealing his former identity. I feel like that's kind of playing it up. I feel like he breaks it, but people still don't know, really, who that is.
I think we're overthinking it. I think it's less obscuring his identity and more obscuring his... almost insecurities, I'd say.
Maybe his insecurity over being Ben Solo.
Right.
The going back, like, Force Awakens level type stuff with Han.
Yeah.
And his like, having that conversation with Vader's helmet, the light, I feel its pull, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I think when he smashes it, he's no longer, like, worried about how people view him or whatever, and he's full on in. I think he used it to, like, intimidate people.
And I feel like... when he crushes his helmet, Ben Solo's gone. We kind of really see that pretty...
But now the helmet's going to be back. We know that.
Right.
He's put it back together. Someone, we don't know who those fuzzy arms are from the Rise of Skywalker trailer, but somebody's putting it back together. J.J. Abrams has already confirmed that it's using the same kind of concept as that Japanese pottery where they put the broken pieces back together using gold, strengthening it and, like, celebrating the fracturing and stuff like that. And so now he's wearing the mask again. Does that mean that he's concealing the Ben Solo side of himself again?
I feel like he's using it now not to conceal himself but to intimidate, because if we're going by, and this may just be because of the whole it's a toy, but with the helmet, a lot of people have been theorizing something about the red inside of it, like it has some force ability, and so with the helmet,
like, the magnifying his force
powers
or whatever.
Obviously this is from a toy, so you gotta kind of take it with a grain of salt.
Right, now explain what's going on with the toy here so that our listeners that may not know what we're talking about understands.
I'm talking about a mask, so we may be talking about something different.
No, I think you're talking about the mask.
We're talking about the mask. Okay. No, I'm sorry, it was like a toy mask.
Right.
Yeah, okay. So basically it has this special functionality to where the red lines in it glow brighter when you yell or something.
Yeah, in the toy it does.
In the toy, right. So that could very well signify that whenever Kylo Ren gets angry
or has rage, maybe
the crystals glow, because we have seen in lots of the art the crystals are
almost like Dryden Voss when he would get angry in the in Solo.
Probably very similar to that. Yeah, and I think that that's got something to do with it's got to be some sort of force. It's got to have some sort of connection.
Maybe the more rage he has, maybe it's a kyber crystal.
I imagine.
We can just go with it's a kyber crystal for now. Maybe the more rage he has, the more it bleeds, and that's why it glows brighter or something.
I think it'll help, like, magnify his force powers in a way.
Interesting. Like, wrapped around his brain or whatever.
Yeah, why not?
It's been very interesting. You know, I don't want to, like, be an alarmist or anything else. I'm not going to, like, over freak out about anything. But if somebody want to tell me where Rose is?
Yeah.
She's in Allegiances, I know that.
Yo, she's in some stuff here, but the reality is... there's been a movement of Star Wars fans that has taken to sharing the hashtag Where's Rose due to the lack of inclusion. This is from, congratulations again to Anthony Bresnikan, who ended his employment with Entertainment Weekly a few months ago and recently secured position with Vanity Fair.
Wow.
And this is an article by our friend Anthony.
Oh, nice.
That came on our show back a while ago, back in April or whatever, May. He says, a movement of Star Wars fans has taken to sharing the hashtag Where's Rose due to the lack of inclusion of the controversial character in marketing and merch for The Rise of Skywalker. Our friend and previous guest, Anthony Bresnikan, has a great article about the importance of this character and the concerns about this on Vanity Fair. Now, there was no official comment from Disney Consumer Products, but a source close to the matter inside the company told Vanity Fair on background, like off the record,
yeah,
that the division takes the Where's Rose inclusivity concern seriously. Star Wars products draw from thousands of pieces of individual art that are meant to be mixed and matched, the source added, which is why the Rose Tico illustrations sometimes appear with, like, the Rebel logo. There was a t-shirt that had Rebel on it, and the pre-release of it, like what it was going to look like, had Rose on it, and then when it showed up on Triple Force Friday, it just said Rebel. And so people were really upset about that. Sometimes the logo is used on its own. So the question is this. Are J.J., Lucasfilm, and Disney riding Rose out of any prominence in The Rise of Skywalker?
No. We already know she has a role in The Rise of Skywalker. We know that she's in it confirmed. We have pictures of it.
Mm-hmm.
We got it from Celebration, so we know it's happening. We also know that she's in the Sparker Resistance novel. She's flying in the gunner turrets of the Millennium Falcon.
So, interesting.
Yeah. No, I don't think she's getting written out by any means. I think what they're doing is they're just trying to mitigate the fan response.
Like, what do you mean?
They're worried that fans are... Nathan. They're worried that fans are going to respond negatively to lots of content and... products with her face on it, because she was a very controversial character from The Last Jedi. I mean, there was a lot of hate towards her, so I think they're just trying to be careful and not market a whole lot with her, and then they'll start releasing stuff probably after the film.
Yeah, I think that's a mistake if that's what they decide to do, though. I think releasing... It's going to look like they're giving in to some of the garbage out there with Phantom Menace type stuff and all of that. You know, you don't have to like this character, but you don't need to be, like, toxic about it.
No.
And giving in to those that are toxic is just going to feed that. It's like when a kid's throwing a temper tantrum and you give them the toy that they wanted, that they were throwing their temper tantrum up, just to stop them from throwing the temper tantrum. It only tells them that the next time they want the toy and they're not getting their way, to throw a bigger temper tantrum.
Yeah.
That's exactly what's going to go on here with this Rose thing, if that's literally what's happening on that. Well, let's talk about it. We've hinted at it in the intro and earlier as well. Freddie Prinze Jr. has something to say about the Force and the Star Wars fandom. Now, I've watched it. Did you guys both watch the video?
No, I didn't.
I did.
You did?
I did.
We can't really, like we said earlier, we can't really play it, but... let's see if I can, like, channel it without, or translate it without the profanities. Star Wars is for expletive kids, he says. And Freddie Prinze Jr. may have been channeling an R-rated version of George Lucas there. Luke, we actually took this, the clip here from, AV Club. You know, we were on AV Club's top 10, worst things of 2018.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. When Rian Johnson was, like, defending himself and... on one of our threads.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, we got the number two most worst thing to happen on the internet.
I love it.
In 2018. That was pretty awesome. Star Wars is for expletive kids, the article says, and Freddie Prinze Jr. may have been channeling an R-rated version of George Lucas there. Lucas himself reportedly said Star Wars was a film for 12-year-olds, sharing lessons of friendship, honesty, trust, doing the right thing, living in the light, and avoiding the dark side. Prinz is very much an adult at 43 years old and still a huge Star Wars fan. He's as invested as Star Wars fans get, dropping truths from George Lucas and dissecting fan theories and complaints. This is a quote from the thing. We'll continue. I did a Star Wars cartoon, which is Rebels, obviously. Mm-hmm. Played Kanan Jarrus. So even I get hate from Star Wars fans, which we're very sorry about that that happens to you, Freddie. But I'm like, look, you're just mad the franchise isn't aging with you. But that ain't how it works. The first one was for kids. The second three were for different kids. And this one is for kids. You're just pissed off Han Solo and gave the Millennium Falcon to a girl. That's it. Because Luke Skywalker is Cinderella or Sleeping Beauty. He can talk to things that don't speak English, and he understands what they're saying. He gets a fairy godfather instead of a fairy godmother who teaches him how to be the best Jedi in the world in no time flat. Sammy, this is the first reaction to your to hearing this. Yeah. It's your hot take. What do you think about Freddie's comments?
I don't disagree with anything he was saying. I mean, maybe less language, but definitely.
I would hope there's less language.
No, I completely agree. I mean, it is for kids, and I don't think that people are figuring that are realizing that. You know, I mean, it's designed to just entertain kids, and so they need to realize that it's not that big a deal. I mean, a lot of the hate I feel like is because the main character is a girl. You know, she's getting the Falcon. She's
and because it's not Luke, Han, and Leia off on a new adventure.
Right. It's something new.
It's a new generation of Star Wars.
A new generation of Star Wars fans. Like, Nathan and I came into this through the sequel trilogy. Now, do I love the original characters? Absolutely. Do I like them more than the sequel trilogy? Probably, but that's not to say that I don't like the sequel trilogy. But we were brought into Star Wars through the sequel trilogy because the films and the new camp and everything about Star Wars is made for kids. So I think people need to figure that out. So I agree. I mean, it is just taught there to teach kids narratives about friendship and things like that.
So, right and wrong, good and evil.
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Loyalty, all of those things. Baby Nate, what do you think about when he says, like, the original trilogy was written for kids, the prequel trilogy was written for another generation of kids, and now the sequel trilogy is written for a third generation of kids?
I feel like that is completely true. There were people that were maybe 4 or 5 when the original trilogy came out, and that's introduced them into that. They maybe became 20 by the time that it was over, and then 99 comes, and there are some other 4 or 5 year old kids that are getting introduced into Star Wars from the
or 10, 11, 12 year old kids.
Yeah, you know? Oh yeah, definitely.
Like
then,
you.
Yes, and then for the sequel trilogy during 2015, which felt like a long time ago, but it wasn't.
No, it was for a 10 year old kid. That was you.
Yes, and that's how Sammy and I really got ushered into the Star Wars universe, and I feel like it is each made for different kids. It is each made for them to be able to make different movies for different generations.
Like what he said, you know, and I think this is a good way of putting it. You're just upset that it didn't age with you. You know, people are wanting all this mature content, and I think that's dangerous. The Mandalorian is kind of, I mean, while we're excited.
As Rogue One might was to some extent.
I mean, I'm excited for The Mandalorian, but I'm also a much more mature Star Wars fan. You know what I mean? I'm older.
Right.
So it's kind of pushing the line of getting a little bit too much for kids. So you've got to be careful with that, I feel like. So,
well, and it's one of the criticisms, you know, what Freddie's talking about here is somewhat similar to the criticisms of Resistance. Resistance is Star Wars Resistance, series, the animated series, because they're like, it's so kiddie and that kind of stuff. Well, guys, that's right. It's on Disney and it's for kids.
It's on Disney Channel, not even Disney XD, right. Like Rebels or anything. Yeah.
Yeah. So it reminds me, especially those quotes about the different generations and stuff. You know, when we were on and we've interacted with Dominic Jones and Chris Siegel and Ben Hart from Star Wars Underworld, those guys are like mega Clone Wars era and prequel fans.
Yes.
Right. And that was the Star Wars of their generation, you know. And so I was a major original trilogy fan, right? I mean, it was Star Wars, it was Empire, and it was Return of the Jedi, and I think one of the reasons I've become such a fan of the sequel trilogy is because I get to experience that through your guys's eyes. I get to watch you guys fall in love with Star Wars. I get to watch you guys get excited about stuff. And that has brought me into it, sort of where I get to relive that experience right. all over again. But I'm not a 44-year-old guy that's freaking out because my Star Wars isn't gritty enough, or my Star Wars doesn't have, you know, when are they going to put an F-bomb in Star Wars, or right. when are they going to, you know, do all this stuff? That's not the way I see it. I'm like, Star Wars should be something I can take my sons to,
right.
and my hope would be my grandkids to, you know, 20, 30, 40 years from now. No, I'm kidding. No, you know what I'm saying? I mean, yeah. Honestly, you know, being 18 years old, Sam, 10 years from now, if they decide to come out with an episode 10, another trilogy in the Skywalker saga, you know, we could be going to see that as three generations. You could be taking a 7, 8-year-old, maybe 5-year-old.
Yeah,
let's go with that. Let's go with that one. a 5-year-old kid with you. Yeah. We're going to see Star Wars together.
Mm-hmm.
That's like, that's what this should be about right. for people. It should be able to use this as, you know, we've talked about this before. This is our mythology.
Yeah.
This is how, and that's what George Lucas intended to do with this. To create a big mythological story you can use to tell the next generation about friendship, loyalty, good, evil, doing the right thing, taking a stand,
mm-hmm.
you know, even political issues. You can discuss way, political yeah. issues, the corruption of government,
oh, yeah.
you know, the corruption of religion with the Jedi Order, all of this kind of stuff. You yeah. can use those to talk about. And that's what we've been doing on this show and around our kitchen table and in our car and, and on the couches and, you know, walking around, whatever we're at,
right.
talking about Star Wars. Exactly. That's what we do. Mm-hmm. And so, Freddie, while I wish you would have done it without the profanities, because we can't play it on the show, I want to give you
kids,
to you know, tell you that I appreciate you saying what you said.
It was very strange to hear him saying
to all hear Kanan Jarrus yeah. drop about 15 F-bombs. Yeah, that was interesting. All right, well, Freddie Prinze Jr.'s comments about the nature of the Force have also sparked a lot of conversation. But what is the official definition? And how has the Force been interpreted over the history of the galaxy? We're looking into that next.
Rebellions are built on hope.
If you live long enough, you see the same eyes in different people.
Lack of faith disturbing.
All right, so when Freddie was on there doing this rant that we just got done talking about, he talked a lot about how the Force is trying to balance itself out. He said something really interesting. And Sam, since you haven't you know, watched the clip, I want to make sure you hear what he said. He's like, literally, he's like, if you understand that the Force is not choosing sides, it's constantly trying to balance itself, mm-hmm. And the ones that learn how to use that to their advantage are the ones that are going to win. And he talks about, he's like, Sidious was the strongest. He understood the Force the best. And he understood that if Anakin is the chosen one, rising up against him, defeating him and trying and killing him is just going to cause the Force to bring someone else up
right.
with it. So he didn't do that. He seduced him
mm.
to the dark side. And that's how he was going to win. He's like, and when you understand, he's like, and he kept saying over and over again, I got this from Dave Filoni and he got it directly from George. This is not my interpretation. This is George's interpretation. And he's going off about all that. But he's like, if you understand, and then he's like, oh, and then he says the Force has to balance itself then with, you know, you've got Sidious and Anakin on the dark right. side.
So there's got to be a light side.
So the Force creates twins, light siders.
Huh.
With that. And he's like, I got that from George Lucas, is what he said.
Uh-huh.
And he keeps going off about it. So a lot of this has been right. He's like, if you understand the way the Force works like this, you know who's going to win in every battle. He's like, you'll figure it out every single time. He's like, I know what's going to happen in the next movie, but I'm not going to tell you what it, because I can figure it out. He's like, and so it's really interesting.
And during this rant, he wasn't just like saying all this stuff because he just wanted to say it. He was actually angry at all the people saying all these hateful and toxic.
Yeah, no, I think that, but the force stuff is really what I want to focus on here. So it got me thinking, you know, and this is the way we intro'd the show. Everybody has their own interpretation of the force, and we all think we understand what the force is. But I thought, let's break it down based on the page on StarWars.com. Not Wikipedia, not, you know, I love Ken Knapsack, not in his book, Why We Love Star Wars, or anything like that. This is official StarWars.com. Their definition of the Force and their interpretation of it as seen in the history of the galaxy. We're going to break that down next. So the definition according to StarWars.com, some of this is going to sound very familiar to us. The Force is a... And again, the other reason I'm bringing this up is that Luminous Beings series that's getting ready to come out. Or the Project Luminous series, where it's talking about, you know, it uses that quote we talked about last week from Obi-Wan Kenobi, and then it says, this was all true until Project Luminous. So everything is like it's, the Force is like becoming like a concept that's being talked about. Not that it has never been talked about, but anyway, it seems like it's going to become a really important going forward. So according to the official definition, the Force is a mysterious energy field created by life that binds the galaxy together. Harnessing the power of the Force gives the Jedi, the Sith, and others sensitive to the spiritual energy extraordinary abilities such as levitating objects, tricking minds, and seeing things before they happen. While the Force can grant users powerful abilities, it also directs their actions, and it has a will of its own, which both scholars and mystics have spent millennia seeking to understand. What do you guys think about the official definition of the Force according to Star Wars?
It seems pretty like everything we've heard before. Maybe not the whole will of its own thing. That's not been explored too much, but I feel like it's not a foreign concept.
Well, I think this goes back to Luke and Ben in A New Hope in Episode 4 when they're sitting there talking about the Force, and he's like, "So does it? It control?" Luke asks, "So it controls your actions, or you know that kind of thing?" And he's like, "So, but he also obeys."
Yes, but you can control. Yeah,
I know that kind of that conversation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's break down the history of the Force, and this goes all the way back to like ancient times in the Star Wars universe, all the way through the sequel trilogy. And we're going to just read through some segments here, and we'll see how long this takes. All right, I'm going to break it down into segments here. All right, in the heyday of the Jedi, the Order's scholars, meaning the Jedi Order, their scholars endlessly debated where and when civilizations first became aware of the Force and its power. No answer was ever considered definitive, but many traditions speak of lost worlds beyond the galactic frontier, suggesting the Force's greatest secrets are yet to be discovered. Different species have their own names for the Force. Mm. There are metaphors for how it's perceived and techniques for learning the powers it can grant. What do you guys think about that? Anything that stands out?
It's a lot like the beings, I don't know their names, at the end of the Clone Wars with Yoda.
The Wills.
Those are the Wills?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, those. Sounds a lot.
Well, they like should that. Be, because that's what the Force idea came from, the Journal of the Wills, according to George Lucas, as he created this idea.
Yeah.
What do you think about the opening there?
No, I think it's interesting. I think that's going to open this probably will be a large part of what Luminous is, just because there's going to be all these planets that have different interpretations and uses for the Force and understandings of it that we can explore. And the whole, you know, different cultures having different names, that's explored a little bit in Legends of Luke Skywalker. One story, I don't remember where it is, but it's Luke's on some ocean planet.
And I've gotten that one for sure.
And that's actually where he learns how to do that fishing thing you see in The Last Jedi. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they call it the tide or things like that, you know, because their whole planet is based around the ocean, so everything else is going to be based around the ocean. So they're talking about the tide, and it's very similar to the idea of the Force.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Maybe could we see this idea of the Skywalker from Thrawn and the Chiss factoring into this? Like, Force users are Skywalkers.
Mm.
Could that be tying into something that we see with Rise of Skywalker? as being, like, you know, Force users were called the Skywalkers.
Yeah, I think we could definitely see something through that. I don't think that's an accident.
No. I mean, why would they put that in Thrawn? It's easily one of the most popular books in the new canon. All three of those books. Because people...
Well, at least most talked about, if nothing else.
Yes, exactly. And we talk about the Skywalkers and these kids that are Force sensitive, and that's what they call them. And it is very different, as we're talking about. Every different planet and every different religion all has their different ways of the Force. Now, they can lose the Force over time the older they grow.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some people that can keep it for a very long time.
Yeah.
All right, so let's keep going on. It says, but all traditions agree that life creates the Force and makes it grow. Individuals' Force potential depends on their levels of midichlorians, microscopic life forms found within the living cells. The Jedi believe midichlorians communicated the will of the Force, which could be understood through meditation. Now, this is a concept that did not exist when they made, or at least it wasn't in mentioned at all in the original trilogy.
Right.
This came out in Phantom Menace 20 years ago with Qui-Gon Jinn and Anakin and all that kind of stuff. It's a controversial element to the Force. What do you think about, you know, the situation and how it describes these microscopic life forms of midichlorians?
I think one of the main criticisms of it is it made it seem like the Force was just microorganisms, but it seems like the way that they describe it is basically these organisms just... The Force is still some mystic force. I mean, it's not the midichlorians. The midichlorians are basically just like a conduit through which people can connect with it. So it's not like dumbing down the Force to be just a bunch of little organisms. It's their, like,
those organisms are actually what helps someone that has a higher concentration of them actually connect to the Force,
right,
and use the Force.
Yeah,
I mean, I've always found midichlorians to be kind of straightforward. I never really found them to be very complicated.
Yeah,
I've always, like, okay, they're the amount of the Force that's the how much stronger it is in this one being. That's always what I've seen it. How strong.
Like they're a channel of the Force in some way?
Yes.
Now, the one thing I don't like about this, like the midichlorians idea, is why can't people, like, just get midichlorian shots to boost their Force sensitivity? You know what I mean? Like, with this idea.
The same way you can't, like, get some kind of a shot to change your own DNA. You know, you can't do that. Well, your DNA is your DNA. And the more midichlorians are tied to who you are genetically. And so that's why Yoda's got such a massive concentration. Anakin had such a massive concentration.
Okay.
Of it.
That's more fair, because I'm like, why can't you just get a quick midichlorian booster and be like, you know...
Yeah, it's not like steroid shots, you know,
right,
to access the Force.
Steroids for the Force.
Right, exactly. Now, it goes on. It says, the Jedi saw the Force as possessing two aspects, the light and the dark. The light was used for knowledge of defense, and channeling it required a Jedi to be calm and at peace. Negative emotions, such as anger, fear, and jealousy, were fuel for the dark side, which offered a quicker, seemingly easier path to great power. To avoid the dark side's lure, the Jedi developed a code emphasizing detachment and forbidding emotional attachments. Jedi seekers found Force-sensitive infants and brought them into the Order's temples, where they learned the ways of the Force alongside other younglings. Feedback or thoughts on that part?
It seems all pretty straightforward. We've been hearing that stuff throughout all of canon.
Are the Jedi wrong on the attachments thing?
Yes.
Yeah, I feel like
Yoda even said that they did wrong with Anakin at the end of Episode 3.
Yeah, no, it was a mistake.
It was
the reason why Anakin turned is because he wasn't allowed to have attachments and connections.
He wasn't allowed to have the medical treatment that Padme needed to...
No, it wasn't medical treatment. He could have had medical treatment. It was the fact that he was... The very fact that he could not have a relationship in open with Padme and talk about it openly and all that kind of stuff is what created the restrictions that, like, created the dark side in the fear, the anger, all of that stuff. In trying to rescue her, he actually kills her. It's a big hot mess is all that is.
So, yes, the Jedi were misled.
All right. Some ancient Jedi rejected the Order's teachings. They fell away from the light using emotions repressed by the Jedi to unlock great powers and dominate others. From the schism, a dark side cult arose known as the Sith. We're all pretty much on the same page with that. All right. This wasn't just a philosophical dispute. Waves of wars between the Jedi and the Sith convulsed galactic civilization and left entire systems lifeless. A millennium before the rise of the Empire, the Jedi defeated the Sith and became protectors of the Galactic Republic, serving as peacekeepers and negotiators in lieu of a standing military. The Order was overseen from the Jedi Temple on the galactic capital world of Coruscant. We all still pretty much moving forward exactly as what we understand. If something that, like, triggers that, like, a thought in your mind, stop me.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about it. The Sith were believed extinct, but they had survived. To prevent infighting and preserve the order, the Sith Lord Darth Bane introduced the Rule of Two, which I think we talked about recently on this, limiting the Sith ranks to a master and an apprentice. For nearly a millennium, the Sith remained in hiding as corruption and complacence ate away at the Republic and the Jedi. Seeing the balance of the Force tipping toward the dark side, Darth Sidious plotted to resurrect the Sith. In his guise as Senator Palpatine, I think that's an interesting word, basically disguise.
Yeah, basically that saying means. That his real identity is Darth Sidious, not Palpatine.
Yeah, he rose to become the Chancellor of the Republic, engineered the Separatist movement in the Clone Wars to convince the Jedi to abandon their traditional roles and become generals of a vast clone army which had been secretly created to bring about their downfall. Now, obviously, that is the plot line of the prequel trilogies.
Right.
But hearing it described like that, with Sidious as being the one making all this happen, which we know, but hearing it in like three or four sentences gives me that, my God, this dude was amazing. Like, evil, but amazing in a way what he came up with.
Yeah, I understand. He was a very intelligent villain. You don't really see those. You see, oh yeah, let's just bring all the Jedi.
Evil down. And thug villains.
Yes,
right.
Like, we see very intelligent.
Even Thanos was just like, I'll grab some stones and kill half the people. You know, it's like that. You can sum up Thanos with that, but Palpatine's got a lot more.
He's been doing this
death to him.
It goes on. Sidious used the dark side of the Force to cloud the Jedi's perceptions as he consolidated galactic power and wove a trap for his enemies. When his enemy, when his identity was finally discovered, he issued Order 66 to his clones, who obediently turned their guns on the Jedi. Sidious had also seduced, which is the word that Freddy used.
Mm-hmm.
So it is from George Lucas.
Well, it's the same idea, right? This is like, I think even Obi-Wan says this in Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
About the Emperor. Sidious also seduced Anakin Skywalker, thought to be the Chosen One, which is an interesting idea. They're Chosen One, thought to be the Chosen One, destined to bring balance to the Force. Anakin fell to the dark side, became Darth Vader, helping his new master vanquish the Jedi. A triumphant Palpatine then declared himself Emperor for a new Galactic Order, an Empire ruled in secret by the Sith.
Hmm. Yeah,
that sounds all like
normal. That's just right in between the end of 3 and leading up to 4.
Anything stand out though in that? I guess maybe the thought to be the Chosen One thing and the that's the one thing that stood out on that.
Yeah, the thought to be a Chosen One was interesting because it seemed like maybe he was and he fell out, or he never was to begin with.
I think we might be digging into this a little bit.
No, I'm just curious about what you thought. Very few knew Emperor Palpatine was a Force wielder, let alone a Sith Lord. That aspect of the Empire was a closely guarded secret. The Emperor's agents systematically destroyed Jedi temples, artifacts, and even historical accounts of the Jedi Order, spreading disinformation that the Jedi had been charlatans and the Force just a primitive superstition.
What's a charlatan?
Like a con man or a fake.
Oh.
Yeah. Hmm. Meanwhile, Sidious's Inquisitors, Jedi survivors lured and corrupted by the dark side. The Inquisitors, we really see that in the comics as much as in...
More than that in Rebels, really.
Yeah. Ruthlessly hunted down Jedi exiles and snatched up Force-sensitive children. So they're going after these Force-sensitive children again.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember seeing that in the comics with the Inquisitors.
No, not.
Or in the Rebels.
It was in Rebels. I remember one
episode.
I think it was where it wasn't where we first saw Ahsoka, but it was like where she first had her like big duel with the Inquisitors. That was that episode. So
it was a big
one. I don't remember anything from the comics, but I very well could be wrong. I'll just have to reread the Darth Vader, Dark Lord of the Sith.
Where are these kids?
What do you mean?
The kids that the Sith Inquisitors snatched up. The four sets of the children.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's kind of implied.
That, like, or they were being trained to become more Inquisitors, I feel like. But I think that they were basically...
Well, Inquisitors have always been described as Jedi turned Sith.
So I think they were basically just wiped out.
What if they weren't?
Then
Sith troopers?
Maybe. Yeah, probably. That would make sense. Timeline could work out.
Yeah.
Vader had been maimed and horribly burned in a lightsaber duel with Obi-Wan Kenobi. That's Mustafar. He survived by being encased in black armor, helped him breathe, but was left more machine than man. That's straight out of... Return of the Jedi. The line, left more machine than man.
Mm-hmm.
In secret, he served Sidious as a Sith apprentice, but publicly he was Palpatine's enforcer. A new generation of Imperial technocrats feared Vader, but also dismissed him as a pitiful vestige of a bygone era and an obsolete religion. Most assumed the fires of the Force tradition had burned out and would never be reignited. That's like straight from the opening scene of all of the Imperial officers on the Death Star.
Yeah.
That whole conversation there. The few Jedi who escaped the Purge did whatever they could to survive. Some concealed their powers to escape the Inquisitors, while others fled to commune with the Force as hermits. Yoda, once the Grand Master of the Jedi Order, pondered the Force's mysteries in exile on Dagobah. Obi-Wan Kenobi sought refuge on Tatooine, where he watched over Luke Skywalker, Anakin's secret son. While with the dark side ascendant, these scattered refugees waited for a day when the balance of the Force would tip towards the light. Once again, thoughts on that last line especially?
It's an interesting idea, because I had never thought of it as, like, you know, between 3 and 4, or, you know, at the end of 3 to 4, that the dark side had been, or sorry, the Force had been more leaning to the dark side the whole time. Which, you know, it makes sense in when you think about it, but I never actually connected that.
It's interesting, though, because if you tie this back to Qui-Gon Jinn, Phantom Menace, the chosen one prophecy of the one who would bring balance to the Force. Mm-hmm. How was the Force out of balance in the prequel era? And then is it really as simple as there has to be an equal number of Jedi and Sith?
I never figured that it had to be an equal number,
because there's this massive out of balance. Apparently in the prequel era.
Yeah, it's
but they're thinking it's going to come and he's going to be a Jedi. He's going to be a lightsider to bring balance to the Force. Yeah. I don't understand what the Chosen One prophecy feels weird and off with that.
Well, I mean, when you actually read the prophecy, it was pretty vague. I mean, Master and Apprentice. When we read it, it was a really vague thing. So we talked about how, like, you can kind of interpret it for either the dark or the light side. So I think, of course, the Jedi thought, well, of course it has to be a light side, because they were dogmatic and had them.
But how did they know the Force was out of balance at that point? They didn't even know the Sith existed.
Well, wasn't it that the Chosen One... Oh, I see where you're going with that. Because they were talking about it in the prequels, like...
Like the Force was out of balance and they needed the Chosen One to balance it.
I don't know. That's interesting.
I feel like we've been thinking of, like Sammy said, the Chosen One prophecy is very vague.
It's ambiguous. It's like all prophecy.
Yes.
It's easily misinterpreted, like Yoda says.
We can think of it as they thought that it needed to be on the light side. That's what it needed to
be. No, but that's not what we're worried about. We're trying to understand why they think that it's out of balance at all in the first place.
Well, the thing is I feel like they think that there has to be this one person that could bring balance to the Force, because they know both sides. And we do see that may be able to come with Anakin, because he was on the light side and then he turned to the dark, and then we might see him back in Rise of Skywalker. So he has both the light side and the dark side in him. He is... felt conflict.
Right, and I think that what you're saying makes a lot of sense, but the question that I still have unanswered is, why do they think that the Force is out of balance?
I feel like they think that there needs to be no Sith. at all.
But they don't know that there are any Sith until Maul shows up, which at the time, you know, when you read Master and Apprentice, there are no Sith. Right? I mean, when you read in that time frame before the Phantom Menace, when Anakin is found by Qui-Gon Jinn and he's contemplating the reality that this child with this massive concentration of midichlorians is potentially the Chosen One prophecy, or fulfillment of the Chosen One prophecy, they haven't encountered Maul yet.
Yeah.
They don't know that the Force is, that the Sith exist. Why is the Force out of balance? If I had George Lucas in this room, which we'll have to call him up, you know, that we need, now that we can access him through Chatter Squadron, we may need to reach out to George and see if maybe George can answer this question for us. Maybe not. All right. A New Hope rose with the Rebel Alliance, from the Rebel Alliance's struggle to destroy the Death Star, an Imperial superweapon powered by Kyber crystals. Summoned from exile on Tatooine, Obi-Wan gave Anakin's lightsaber to Luke, began to teach the boy the ways of the Force. Though barely trained, Luke showed immense potential, with the Force guiding him. Which, then again, let's just stop here. According to Star Wars, officially, the interpretation that people apply towards Rey in the sequel trilogy, claiming she's a Mary Sue, could just as easily be said about Luke. Nobody says it about Luke because it's Luke friggin' Skywalker.
Right.
They just don't want Rey, and they want to complain about it. And she's not any more of a Mary Sue than Luke Skywalker would ever be. That's my opinion. All right. with the Force guiding him, he destroyed the Death Star, shaking the Empire's rule to its foundations, and proving the Dark Side's triumph was not complete. Any thoughts, comments on that section?
Sounds good.
We're just going to agree with everything that they say?
No.
Okay, cool.
Betrayal was, had a major disagreement.
We did, actually. The Force thing is really going to bug me now. Betrayal was second nature to the Sith, with Master and Apprentice always struggling for dominance. When Sidious and Vader discovered Luke was Anakin's son, both sought to use him for their own ends. Now, the both there, that's Sidious and Vader.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think Vader was wanting to use Luke to overthrow the Emperor and
restore peace to my galaxy.
Right, that was the whole...
To my empire.
That was the whole Episode 5 rant. Right. And then obviously Palpatine wanted to use Luke to get rid of Vader, this old piece of machinery, and get some new blood in there.
After training on Dagobah with Luke, or with Yoda, Luke unwisely chose to confront Vader in their lightsaber duel. This is like the most famous moment in Star Wars history. Vader struck off Luke's hand and revealed the terrible truth of his parentage, and he made Luke a fateful offer. Join him. Together they would overthrow the Empire and rule the galaxy as father and son. It's a very good, you know, dad and son moment.
Yeah, it's great. Just cut off your hand.
So if you guys don't ever, like, if you oppose me, I'm cutting off your hands before, to try to get you to come onto my side.
Yeah, that's a good tactic.
It makes a lot of sense. Luke refused? No, duh. Just as he refused to believe Yoda and Obi-Wan when they said Vader could never return to the light. Interesting how they're combining that. It's like, I honestly, I still wonder if Obi-Wan, at the end of Twin Suns, when he has the conversation with Maul about Luke being the Chosen One, if that's not more of an accurate interpretation.
Oh, I definitely feel like that.
You know, George never said that. George always said that Anakin was the Chosen One.
I don't know. We know that George is a little crazy.
Well, that's okay. He's allowed to be.
Yeah.
He stubbornly believed that the man Vader once was Anakin, who once was Anakin, could still be redeemed, and it was this simple faith in family, not Jedi doctrine, that would save the galaxy. What do you think about that? Belief in family and the closer relationships and attachment that saves the galaxy, not the dogma of the Jedi.
No, I think that's interesting. I really like that because it's what Anakin needed. He needed to be able to have connections and use
with Padme, right, and with
and his family,
Ben and Shmi.
Yeah,
and yeah, all of that.
If he was able to connect with his family, he would have been able to, it wouldn't have ended so badly, I feel like.
Yes, and the reason that we find Luke to be so successful with his journey in the original trilogy is that he has attachments. He has his sister, and Han, and Chewbacca, and R2, and C-3PO. He has his own family. And he and all of those people, if he didn't have those people, he wouldn't have gotten past A New Hope. We wouldn't have had Empire Strikes Back or Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
So as it goes on, it says Sidious lured Luke to the second Death Star, hoping to manipulate the boy into taking Vader's place as his Sith apprentice. But Luke refused to kill his father and awakened the good slumbering in him. When Sidious turned on Luke, Vader hurled his master to his death before dying himself. The Chosen One had indeed brought balance to the Force by destroying the Sith. But again, my problem with this interpretation is that if the... Do they know that the Sith exists at the beginning of The Phantom Menace, or suspect that, and that's why the Force is out of balance? What the heck is going on here?
Well, we do know that there are people in the Jedi Order that are turning.
Oh, yeah, we had...
to the dark side.
We had some Darksiders in Jedi Dooku Lost.
Dooku Jedi Lost. We heard of outsiders, people that didn't like the Jedi Order, and went away to the dark side, and that's what happened Dooku. He goes to the dark side.
But then, if that's the case, how is destroying Palpatine and the Sith balancing the Force?
How is that balanced? Because then it seems like it's tipping more towards the light side.
It feels out of balance still. And I know this isn't the first time that this argument has been made.
I know, but...
But it's like really starting to hit home as we read through this.
I don't know how they're going to fix this in The Rise of Skywalker.
Maybe they have to use Project Luminous or something to try to fix this.
Don't want
to
be J.J. Abrams.
Right, for sure. With the Sith vanquished and the Empire shattered, Luke wondered what to do next. Should he create a new Jedi Order, or was that philosophy best left in the past? Finding no guidance from the Force, that's interesting to me. What did that mean?
I got a bad feeling about this.
That kind of felt like he had an impulse to just...
I'm not getting any answers. It's like, okay, we're believers, we're Christians, we claim that, right? We pray, and when you don't hear anything, you just, what do you do? Just go out on your own and figure it out.
Well, you're not supposed to. But
no, but that's kind of like what this seems to be suggesting, is that Luke didn't get any answers to his questions from the Force, so he just decided to go out on his own, and that's what creates the Jedi Academy.
And then it'd be because... could it be because the Force was out of balance and it needed to, so it just started ignoring the light side to work on the dark side, maybe? That's why Luke wasn't getting any answers?
I don't know, it's a good point.
That may be what it is. I feel like the Force didn't give him any answers because it didn't really know what was going on. I feel like it didn't know, there was no Sith that we know of right now in the galaxy at that time. And why Luke needed to make a Jedi Order was something that was strange, because probably the Force was like, there's something weird going on. And we know that Snoke himself is not a Sith. That is made canon, and that is confirmed. But we do know that Kylo Ren is kind of now a Sith in The Rise of Skywalker.
There's a lot of Sith stuff coming out in this episode.
Yes. Okay. And, I mean, there's a lot going on, but I feel like Luke can sometimes be misguided a lot, even with the Force. Afterwards, he puts himself in exile and forgets the Force completely. Now, why would he do that?
Like, he's like extremes, which is Anakin, too. Anakin's going to extremes all the time, too.
Yeah, and he puts himself away from the Force.
And it's Rey. I mean, I'm saying Rey's a Skywalker. That's not what that comment was. But that sort of Rey, she's like swings from one emotion to the next. Yeah. I don't want to have anything to do with this. And now, you know, Ben is good, Ben is evil.
Yeah, literally just runs off.
She's like all over the place.
Yeah.
When Kylo Ren becomes the calming influence in the relationship,
there's
a problem. Now it goes on. Let me read back again. It says, finding no guidance from the Force, he spent years searching the galaxy, seeking answers as a Jedi and for himself.
It's largely the Legends of Luke Skywalker.
And
well, no, it's also all the whole Lor San Tekka thread from the comic books and stuff like that. It was the most personal of reasons that caused him to reluctantly begin training students again. His nephew Ben Solo was extraordinarily strong with the Force, but also a volatile boy in desperate need of a teacher.
So going back to my idea that the Force is what's why the reason he's not hearing anything is because the Force needs to balance it. Maybe the Force brought up Ben because it, thinking long term, that Ben was going to turn to the dark side. So it thought, okay,
I've got to rise Kylo Ren
right,
to balance out Luke.
To yeah,
That's exactly what Snoke was saying.
And that's exactly what Freddie Prinze seems to be suggesting.
Yeah, because he was like, I thought
Luke, it would be Luke, was it?
Who was here to confront me in The Last Jedi, because he thought Luke was going to confront Ben,
and it's
not Rey.
It's a lot like the Force is talking through Snoke in that scene. He's like, I thought it was Luke that was going to be fighting Kylo Ren. Mm. But Anakin and Luke pushed himself away from the Force because he kind of felt like blamed the Force for what happened to Kylo.
I think he blamed himself.
So the Force needed to rise another person up, Rey, to balance Kylo because Luke was out of the picture.
Interesting. And then Luke is gone. He is out of the picture now because he has fulfilled his will in the Force.
And Snoke is gone.
Yes.
Who is a Force user? We saw him use the Force.
No, yeah, definitely. Dark side Force.
Exactly. Lorks. Who's Lorks? Who's Lork? Lork? I can't even figure out how that came out.
Lorks and Tekka, I think, is what you're saying, and then Luke and
maybe
Lork.
Luke's new order ended abruptly as Ben fell prey to the dark side adept Snoke and his demons. And his own demons. Oh, that's what it meant. Yeah, okay. And Ben fell prey to the dark side of Depth Snoke and his own demons, meaning Ben's own demons. He destroyed Luke's academy, became Kylo Ren, Snoke's apprentice, and the champion of the First Order. Battered by grief and his own perceived failure, Luke retreated to Ahch-To, the legendary site of the First Jedi Temple.
Okay, this just came up to me. Now, we have always assumed that the Knights of Ren were students that Kylo Ren's...
Well, no, that's been a theory. I don't know.
It's been a major theory, but now that's mainly debunked. They're all the same species, and they're all following Kylo Ren.
I would be careful about that, because I know what picture you're talking about, and it's pretty vague and ambiguous when it comes to that. So I wouldn't just straight up say that each
I'm not saying it's debunked, but it's more... It's more plausible than it's being some people that Kylo Ren spared.
All right, let's go back. Battered by grief and his own perceived failure, Luke retreated to Ahch-To, the legendary site of the First Jedi Temple, and cut himself off from the Force. He intended to die and ensured the Jedi tradition died with him. But the dormant will of the Force would soon awaken. Which is, do we think that's Rey?
Rey, yes. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Kylo hungered to prove himself a master of the dark side, but still felt the pulse of the light. And on Jakku, a Force-sensitive scavenger of humble origins began a journey that would end Luke's exile and send new shockwaves through the Force. So according to the official StarWars.com, maybe I'm reading too much into this, the dormant will of the Force soon awakens, and we get Kylo Ren as he is, but also Rey as the result of that.
Yeah.
Is what it sort of reads like.
Yeah, that's how it reads for me, but I mean, again, we could be reading our own ideas into it.
I know, but I feel like we have Rey as a very passionate Jedi Order follower. It's really her main storyline throughout the whole thing. And what it says with Luke trying to let the Jedi tradition go down with him, I feel like it's the Force's will to that Rey takes the books. I feel like the Force wants Rey to read those books and learn everything. Those books are a lot like not just the Jedi books. It is the Forces. It is all about the Force. It's not,
and it's, and it, we got to recall, it is like extremely ancient,
right?
Like from before some of this craziness happens with the Force.
And it seems like those are the wills, like
not, the wills would have written it. Yeah, the Journal of the Wills.
And we, if you read, oh, Guardians of the Will?
Yeah.
Guardian of the Wills. Throughout the whole thing, they have spots. Right before every chapter, they have the Path of the Jedi, the Jedi Code, and the
Sith different code, instructions of that.
And all the stuff from the Wills. And it's really interesting to see, because there's one that isn't really like the Sith or the Jedi. It is more kind of like
what, a balance.
Yes, the balance. What it is. And that's closer to the end, saying that this is what it is. And I feel like...
Any final thoughts on the Force?
It's complicated. It's complicated.
It's really complicated. But I love the idea of the Force for this film. Because it just gives it some overarching mystery behind the whole story. That makes it a lot of fun. The good and the evil in this force. No, I mean, I say force, but I'm not saying it like that. You know,
yeah.
This force that is behind the actions of everything. It makes it a really interesting dynamic that a lot of franchises don't have.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I've often said this about God. So I can say it in this context, it applies to the Force. If you can explain it, it isn't the Force.
Yep.
All right. So anything else you guys want to talk about?
Anything else?
Yeah. So Chris Hemsworth would love to join the Star Wars franchise.
Well, that would be pretty cool.
I mean, Chris Hemsworth, that is Thor, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hmm.
I think we even talked about him as a possibility on our episode a few times back. We didn't like him as an idea.
I don't know. All right. So Star Wars reveals the longest surviving Jedi after Order 66.
Yeah, it's this... what's this character's name? Let's look for it again on here. It's the Nakmed. It's going to be described or talked about in the Force Collector novel that's coming out in The Journey to the Rise of Skywalker.
Hmm.
Should be interesting.
So that's a little strange. For now, that's the longest surviving Jedi we know of, till we get to Fallen Order. Do we know if he lives after the sequel trilogy? He might die at the end of the game.
That would be interesting. Now, and then the last one is, you know, Rian Johnson, who kind of let you name a porg. He's actually coming to Colorado. He's coming to Denver for a special film festival where they're going to be doing a screening of Knives Out, his new movie that's coming out, which we desperately really want to see.
Yeah, it does look really good.
And it happens to be on October 31st, the day after we're convinced that Turbis would be made canon. Would be pretty cool to go to Denver and hook up with him and maybe get him to sign Star Wars and Adventures issue number 27. Get a video with him again.
Just like profusely. I don't know how much we would thank him.
Hug him. Like, just go. I don't know if you would do this.
I would.
Because you wouldn't. But I swear. Because I we've said multiple times that I think Dad and I are sometimes more excited about this Turbis thing than you are. We'll probably just go up there and like hug
him. Well, but that's just Nathan's personality. He doesn't express a lot of excitement outside when inside his stomach's going crazy. Okay. This week's podcast poll of the week, if we ever remember to post it. Who do you believe was stronger in the Force? I want to get your guys' hot take on this one. Yoda, Sidious, or Kenobi? Who's stronger in the Force?
For me, it's almost a tie between Yoda and Sidious. I almost want to say Sidious just because of what he was able to pull off.
Mm. This is... I don't know.
Wow.
I mean, this may just be like me trying to go against Sam, I guess. I don't know. But I would say Kenobi.
Really?
Yes. Yoda, he uses his Force, but most of the time misguided. He's very wise, but he is misguided.
Kenobi seems to almost be like a calming North Star throughout the Force stuff.
In most points, Kenobi is much more
wise. But he's also the most deceptive of all the Jedi. He's willing to lie, and the reason he's good at it is because he convinces himself that it's truth from a certain point of view. Mm. And that's what makes him interesting with it. Well, let's see what you guys think about that. We want to thank all of our producers. We got Michael Condon, DJ Blake, Emily Hoffman, Eric McGilvray, and Ian Thompson. And, of course, Kate Disney-Lugers, Judith Jesse, and Roberto Moreno, our senior producers. Thank you guys so much. We would love for all of you that are listening to this to check out our Patreon page. We've got a contest going right now to give away a Black Series Constable Zuvio, and you can get in on that by being a part of
our Patreon
with that. So check it out, patreon.com/Tatooine Sons. We're all over social media, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, all that stuff, not Snapchat because I don't understand it. And we haven't gotten any reviews for a few weeks, and I'm getting a complex. So if you're listening to this...
we got four Patreon.
We did, though. That's pretty cool. Money speaks. all right. Thank you guys so much for being a part of this. Anything else you guys want to say?
May the Force be with you.
May the Force be with you.
May the Force be with you, always.
This party's over.
I like that Wookiee.
Don't get technical with me.
Join, please.
Yep.
Tatooine Sons, the Star Wars podcast, is not endorsed by Lucasfilm Limited or Disney and is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The official Star Wars site is located at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, the Star Wars logo, and all names and pictures of Star Wars characters, vehicles, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Lucasfilm Limited or their respective trademark and copyright holders.